When the independent member for Oxley made her maiden speech in the House of Representatives in September 1996, most of us were not aware that a political phenomenon was beginning. But she shattered the apparent consensus of multiculturalism. She said things in a speech like, "There are dangers of Asian immigrants swamping Australia." She talked of reverse racism and taxpayers funding an industry serving Aborigines. There was an enormous reaction. Prime Minister Howard was in trouble for not trampling on her, but his deputy Tim Fisher said she was jeopardising jobs, exports and jobs. Out in Australia, something stirred, a nerve was touched. Was it people agreeing with her views? Or was it a reaction from people tired of economic rationalism, confused by globalism, wanting to go back to simpler days? That question has never been answered. I suspect it will be at the next election. But the creation of her One Nation Party has all the parties scurrying around, gazing at their navels and being holier than thou, and probably some of them thinking more about preferences than principles. That makes the views of today's guest vital in the debate of the future direction of Australia. Today, she can tell us what she does stand for. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Pauline Hanson.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to give a big thank you to the Press Club and to the President, Don Rydell, for his invitation here today and giving me the opportunity to speak to you. Well, it's good to be back in Adelaide again, and thanks for turning on the warm weather for me, considering I'm a Queenslander. It's surprising the introduction that I received from Mr. Rydell. How I hit the political scene, that I delivered a maiden speech. A maiden speech that I believe I spoke about a lot of what the Australian people were thinking, as many have come up to me since and said, "Well, Pauline, you're only saying what we're thinking, but you've got the guts to get up and say it." I stand before you here today not as a politician, not as an academic with university degrees, but a mother of four children, a woman who's been a small business woman most of her life, a woman who's been through marriages, and I'll say two, a marriage breakdowns and divorce, and having reared my children by myself for the last 14 years. I've seen the heartache of my children as they grow older and leave schooling and come to me and say, "Mum, how do I get a job? What do I do?" I've known what it's like to run your small business from a sole proprietor, to work 80 or 90 hours a week, and find at the end of the week that if you have staff, you pay their wages, you pay your bills, and what's left is yours to try and provide for your family. I left school at a young age, and when I left school, I could walk in one door and out of that door into another to know there was a job waiting for me. Not these days. We keep pushing our children on to further education because there's no jobs for them. And now we're at a stage in Australia where we have the academics taking jobs of high school leavers. This is not the country that I grew up in. Oh, I may not have all the answers, but I'm trying to find the answers. Through trying to understand, through consultation, by speaking to the just ordinary Australians, grassroots Australian people. Many of you here today have probably come to hear for your first time from Pauline Hanson herself, what she stands for. And I know this is the press club, and many of you are from the press. And many of you haven't been very kind to me over the years. But I came into politics very naive. I believe if someone speaks the truth, they expect to have the truth printed. And I believe that the freedom of the press was to print the truth in as much that don't be my judge and jury, let the people judge me. So as a politician, yes, you will look at me now as a politician. Some say you've got the background of the Liberal Party. Well, I will tell you that when I was in local government for 12 months, I wasn't associated with any political party. I'd never been to any meeting before in my life with a political party. I joined the Liberal Party in 1995. I was endorsed as the candidate for Oxley in 1996, and I was thrown out by February 1995. I was endorsed as the candidate, and I was thrown out 16 days before the 1996 election. Because I dared to call for equality for all Australians on one issue, and I wouldn't back down, and I wasn't going to be anyone's yes person. And, of course, I was disendorsed. I remember the media came to me and they said, oh, John Howard said he was sorry it took them 3 hours to get rid of you. And I said, well, it may have taken him 3 hours to get rid of me. It's going to take him 3 years to get used to me. Well, it's taken a bit longer than that. And as Donna said in his introduction, that now they're all scrambling for the preferences. One nation is just not one woman. This red-headed woman from a fish and chip shop background. Small business. One nation represents, in the last federal election, 10% of the population who agrees with my views and the opinions of what I've raised. And I do believe it's greater than that. One Nation has come about because people have been so disgruntled with the major political parties and the direction that they've had this country headed in. I, as just an average Aussie, have felt that, been so disgruntled about where we are headed as a nation, as a people. I was given an opportunity that very few Australians ever have, to stand up and have a voice in this country. Yes, I've been controversial, and I've been called racist. But think in your hearts, has any one of you ever heard any racist comments from me? Is calling for equality of all Australians racism? Is calling for to have a say in how our country should look like or what we should be further down the track, is that racism? Is having pride in yourself as a nation and proud to be Australian racism? Criticism is not racism. And I'm not a racist person. I have been called simplistic by the Prime Minister when I dare stand up and ask a question about free trade, about multiculturalism. Even today I bring some notes with me with regards to, it's quite interesting. I'm getting older from 5 years ago. But the hearing's still good, so I'm listening to each and every one of you, which you might comment out there about. I actually brought a document here with regards to, I'm going to talk about multiculturalism and racism, racial vilification by the Honourable J.W. Olson, 1998. And he states in his Hansard speech, "The emergence of the One Nation Party in this country is of great concern to me as Premier of a state which prides itself in being racially tolerant. I am concerned. I am concerned about the effect Pauline Hanson will have on this state's economy. We are an export economy. Our future lies in the export area. Pauline Hanson and her party will hurt trade in our traditional areas of sheep, beef, wheat, motor vehicles and other manufactured goods. She will wreck the economy, and I, for one, will not sit idly by and let this happen. Every South Australian has worked too hard to sit back and see our state go backwards because of a political party which I believe does not represent the best interests of all Australians. And I stress to all Australians because it gets to the heart of what is an Australian. Australia is a multicultural nation. The reality cannot be altered or ignored, nor should it be. And in the main, we all enjoy a quality of life beyond that which exists in many countries. One nation can never change who we are and how we have evolved as a nation. Instead of us being cultural differences to promote division, we should be celebrating them and we should be proud of them. One Nation or Pauline Hanson can never do damage to the trade in Australia. That's only through government legislation. And they've tried to pass the buck on to me over the years that I was the one that upset trade or our exports or our imports into Australia, which is not true at all. Over the years, I've fought against the imports of pork into Australia, the cooked chicken meat, and with it came the Newcastle disease, which has killed off millions of birds. The pork industry, no tariffs, but the flood of pork into this country has destroyed the pork producer. Now they're looking at bringing in the apples with fly blight and the salmon and the citrus juice from overseas with a 3.85% tariff, yet we see oranges being ploughed into the ground and trees being burnt off. Yes, we have exports, but you don't sell yourself short as a country. We have very good produce, we have very good exports in Australia. And we will sell them, because if we sell them at the right price and we sell quality of product, the rest of the world will buy it, but you don't sell yourself short. And you don't sell this country out. Free trade and this globalisation is what is destroying us as a nation. And even today, they state that $700 billion of assets in Australia is now foreign owned, and soon it will be amount to $1,000 billion of our assets is foreign owned. We've allowed ourselves to allow the market share in Australia of near 90% is controlled by big business. We've allowed ourselves for the governments to introduce the deregulation of the dairying industry. And with it is many dairy farmers who have forced off their lands. And more importantly in Australia, what is happening here is a way of life and a standard of living. Because we're told that it's got to be globalisation. I'm not for isolation, by no means. As Jack McEwan said many years ago, he wasn't for isolation, but he was for protectionism. And so did Abraham Lincoln in his time in office. And we're looking back approximately 150 years ago when Abraham Lincoln was against the reduction of tariffs in America. And he said, if you allow industries into America, they will take over our jobs, and with it we will lose our profits. But if you do have the tariffs, you will have the jobs and you will have the profits within your country. What I've spoken about over the years is protecting our own industries and manufacturing. You don't allow a cheap import from overseas that pays wages of only a few dollars a day to flood our market, destroy our own industries here, and with it, our jobs go. The government has allowed for foreign investment. Foreign investment has proven that these people come here, buy up successful Australian businesses, downsize them, and that people are sacked, thrown onto the scrap heap at 40 and 45 years of age. And what's their future? And then they take the companies overseas. What are we actually bargaining? You bring in pork into this country with no tariffs, yet in Denmark it's $3,500 tariff. So once they destroy the pork industry here, what's the next one to go? And the next, and the next, and the next. The textile and clothing and footwear industry was another one. It all comes down to common sense. You start with producing for yourself to meet your own demands. You don't bring in concentrated orange juice from overseas, which destroys our own industry here, yet if we were to double production, we'd service our own needs. Common sense. We've allowed the banking system through government legislation to control over 87% of our banks in Australia. Once the great Australian icon, the Commonwealth Bank, now they're charging you a fee if you deposit $3,000 or more. This is once owned by the Australian people. And have a look at Telstra. Who spoke out against Telstra? I did, another issue. Because with it you had an asset at the time was bringing in $2.2 billion, estimated to bring in around $8 billion profit. Australians already owned it. It was ours. And then the government with it will go 54,000 jobs, and of course services have gone with it as well. Because we are appeasing the multinationals and the big business. Because the government of the day and the opposition, I don't care who they are, they've sold this country out and they've sold our rights away with it. Joel Nelson goes on here to speak about the multiculturalism. If anyone hasn't got this book, I encourage you to get it. And it's called Among the Barbarians by Paul Sheehan. It's a very interesting book, and he's done extremely well with it. And in this book here on page 112, let me read something to you that Barry Jones said. He let the truth escape on the 30th of August of 1997. Now, I've been criticised for about multiculturalism, and this is his words. The handling of it, immigration, by the previous Labor government was, I'd have to say, less than distinguished party, because I think it was seen as very important, a tremendously important element in building up a long-term political constituency. There was that sense that you might get the Greek vote locked up, or from other party political points of view, you might get the Chinese vote locked up. As a result, the idea of bringing groups of people to fulfil family reunion requirements and so on was seen as being a real advantage to the party in power at the time. Unquote. It was much worse than that. Any criticism of Labor's immigration policies or multicultural program was described as racism. So you see, they had to attack me. When I spoke about swamped by Asians in my maiden speech was that I was concerned about the home reunion program, family reunion program in Australia, because we had a high influx of people coming from Asian countries who had then the first right or choice to bring out their family. And over a period of time, you would create an imbalance. I have said that Asians have and will always have a presence in Australia, but you need to maintain a balance. Australia is a multiracial country. Multiculturalism, as the government's push upon us, will destroy us in our national pride and who we are as a nation. People that have come here to Australia, I respect them immensely, because to leave their homeland and the reasons they have come here is for a better way of life. That's why they've come. And we have an obligation to those people because we invite them into our country. They have an obligation to maintain work, a right to a job, a right to a decent standard of living. But more importantly, my job as a politician, and if I can be elected to the Senate for Queensland at the next federal election, my first and foremost responsibility will be to the people of Australia and to ensure that they have the right to jobs and to opportunities in this country before we bring others out here to Australia, that they will be fighting for that job. There is another big issue at the moment. I think it's very important to Australian people in our future, and that is Woodside. Shell is proposing to take over Woodside, Australia's largest independently owned oil and gas company. The company is now our most successful deliverer of oil and the largest exporter of liquefied natural gas to the Asian market, presently holding 10.5% of that market. The FIRB, the Foreign Investment Review Board, has yet to give its approval. The Treasurer, Mr Costello, and Mr Howard, in the national interest, must say no to Shell's proposal. Energy is a resource critical for national development. Its ownership creates wealth and prosperity to those who control the resource, and this control gives government choices to shape the nation's wealth and economy, when resource control remains with their national corporations. This has important implications for Australia's national accounts and foreign debt. Australia's energy in Woodside is our potential destiny. Our control of it is our future. Woodside's resources can power the future development of Western Australia, Northern Territory and Queensland. Industrial development from the gas resources in the Timor Sea are currently under consideration for significant industrial development just north of Darwin, providing opportunities for the creation of high-tech export industries producing LNG, sarin gas, petrochemicals and methanol. This proposed development will form the cornerstone which will make it economically feasible for gas to be transported from Darwin to Mount Isa to North Queensland and into eastern Australia. This proposed new northern natural gas hub will significantly enhance the natural gas grid and provide supply security to Australia's larger population centres in the southern and eastern states, now heavily reliant on maturing gas fields in central Queensland. The Northwest Shelf gas under the control of an independent Woodside is the foundation for a national energy strategy to develop the Australian economy in Northern Australia and bring majority benefits, especially to rural Australians in this region. This national interest is important to any government. With respect to the proposed takeover point, if Shell takes control of Woodside, then 90% of Australia's gas reserves, the nation's major source of energy, would be controlled by foreign interests. Should control of the Northwest Shelf resource pass to Shell, 90% of Australia's gas would be controlled and operated by foreign companies. No other country in the world allows this strategic energy resources to be controlled by foreign interests. Both the Liberal Party and the Labor Party have seen CRA, Coal and Allied and Oak Ridge, these two companies produce 20% of the world's seaborne trade in coal, and Ampol Petroleum be sold to overseas corporations. The offer and asset transfer and debt obligation is essentially cash neutral and highly undervalues Woodside's true worth. The offer takes Shell's initial control of Woodside to 56%, but does not exclude full takeover at a later date, despite the FIRB contributions conditions. What is at stake is the concentration of control of a significant portion of Australia's energy resources and the impact such control would have on Australia's ability to develop these resources and compete in world markets. The question one must ask is Australia's national interest best served by having these gas and oil resources and the investment cash flow they generate control by a company, Shell, which is conflicted by multiple competing projects elsewhere in the Asian region and a major player in the global LNG market from which Australians derive no benefit, or by a company, Woodside, whose focus is on bringing gas resources and oil to market opportunistically without having to consider how that might affect the profitability of projects in other countries. The different focus by both Shell and Woodside needs to be carefully considered with respect to ownership and control of these resources, their development and their respective benefit to the nation. Australia's national interests are best served by having these gas and oil resources and the investments cash flows they generate control by Woodside, whose commercial interests align with those of Australia. Woodside's focus is to provide gas for residential, commercial and industrial development in Australia and to power the development of our economy. It is also the largest Australian exporter of LNG to Asia, generating 4% of Australia's commodity exports. Shell has four other LNG projects in the Asia-Pacific region: Russia, Brunei, Oman and Malaysia, competing for the same Asian markets as Woodside. Shell has a conflict of interest if it controls Woodside and would need to decide whether it would promote the Northwest Shelf over its other Asian Pacific projects. There is every indication that Shell would promote its other project and LNG interests into new markets such as China and India over Woodside's energy. Currently, Woodside is bidding for the LNG terminal project in Guangdong, China, against Shell. Shell has refused to commit Australian gas to this project and market. Had Shell now owned Woodside, the latter would not have been able to submit a tender for this project. Woodside is Australia's most successful oil explorer. Woodside has discovered 55% of Australia's oil reserves over the past 10 years, 75% over the last 3 years, and in 1999-2000 discovered about half the oil reserves left in Bass Strait. The discovery was 100% Australian-owned. Ladies and gentlemen, what I will implore the government of the day is not to allow the takeover again of another Australian company. And it's important to Australians and their future that we are and should have full control of our resources, especially our fuel resources in Australia. And I will ask Australians to get behind and notify their members of parliament that they will not support such a takeover of another Australian company. We have seen the escalating fuel prices in Australia, where it has affected many Australians, small business, the rural sector, and just ordinary mums and dads. I have another letter here, isn't it? Foodland. A gentleman sent me a letter and he said, "Here we are again, lose another." Well, the company was Franklin's, and Franklin's was owned by Hong Kong, but here he's concerned about the big takeover again by Coles, Bilo, Woolworths. Again, the market share and control of pricing. That is so very important in Australia that the governments have to realise you can't just hand it all to big business again to control it. As I said before, the dairy industry. whereas once they received a fair price for their item, around about 40, 50 cents a litre, but now they're in about 25, 26 cents a litre, or maybe even less, 22 cents a litre, being forced off their farms and a way of life. Not bad management. Believe me, it's because of government legislation and control. And you may sit out there, and I don't know what your positions in life are or whether you are academics, and I'm sure there's a big cross-section of the public here today. But what annoys me with a lot of people is you sit in your, and some of these people, these academics, sit in their positions and have no regards for their fellow Australians who are struggling out there. And the attitude is, well, it won't affect me. But it does affect you. It affects every Australian. And all I am fighting for the majority of Australians is a fair go. That's all Australians ever want, is a fair go. But I've seen this country being split apart. I've seen the rich get richer and the poorer get poorer, and I've seen the have and have-nots. I believe in a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and I believe that people should reap the rewards of their hard work. I've seen documents where it states that big business, and we have got the banking sector, that donate large sums of money to political parties. Why? Because of their own self-interest? Have a look at One Nations. You won't see the donations by big companies. You will see probably donations from pensioners or those who can least afford to support us to make sure that we're still there, to be a voice on the political scene. I don't claim to know everything, and I don't claim to have the answers for everything. But I think what I have done with the Australian politics is woken up many Australians to not be so apathetic about their politics and where this country is headed. And that's what it's all about, is freedom of choice, freedom of debate, and freedom of speech. And when I see these young kids out the front protesting because they've come to hear Pauline Hanson, yet I read in the paper where this student reckons it, believes it is her belief to freedom of speech, yet it's not my right, so they protest against me. You have your protest at the ballot box. You choose who you wish to vote for on their policies and on their issues. And as far as preferences goes, I'm not there to support the Liberal Party, the Labor Party or the National Party. I'm there to support what's right for the Australian people. And if any party ever puts up a policy that is in the best interests of the Australian people, I will support it regardless of their political backgrounds. And if it is not, I will speak out against it. And I don't believe in knocking just for the sake of knocking. A lot of people are actually hurting in this country. I see too many Australians being thrown onto the scrap heap at 40 and 45 years of age, who have their children come to them and say, "Mum, Dad, what do? I can't get a job." And what do their parents tell them? "Sorry, son, sorry, daughter, I can't tell you. I'm on the scrap heap myself." We need to rebuild this country. And we can do it with industries and manufacturing and to have a diversity of jobs for our kids. We need to start up apprenticeship schemes, and One Nation has an apprenticeship scheme where in the first year the government pays 75% of the wage, the second year 50% of the wage, and in the third year 25% of the wage. And a lot of tradesmen and women will put on apprentices if they are given a helping hand. We can turn this country around, but give incentives back to industries and manufacturing so they're Australian-owned. Why can't we put labelling on our produce out there that says, well, if it's a green colour coding, that means it's fully Australian product by an Australian company. If it's yellow, it's actually half and half. It could be Australian product but a foreign company or vice versa. And if it's red, it's totally foreign. Why can't we actually promote and push people to buy Australian made? Why is it when I go shopping, I pick up something that's made in China, made in India, made in Philippines? Why don't we make the farm machinery and the ball bearings and all the things that we used to make here beforehand? We've seen all this slide away, and with it, jobs. Instill pride and respect and self-esteem into people by allowing them the right to work. All I can say now is, when election is held in later this year, we as Australians will go to the polls again to cast our vote for someone who we believe will be there to represent us and our best interests. As I said to you, I stand before you not as a polished politician, and I don't know if I ever claim to be one. I'm just an Aussie who's learnt a lot of trying to understand the Australian people, and I'm trying to fight for a fair go. And there's a lot of other Australians out there who feel exactly the same way as I am. You just want that fair go. So when you go to the polls, it's your choice. You can always give us a go and see what we can do for you. Or you'll end up with the same politics, the same direction that both the political parties have dished out to us for a long time. And with it, one day you might turn around and say, what is it? What's left? Where's my kid's future? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And now questions from the media. And this time we've got a fixed microphone. We'd ask you to, members of the media, to queue up there behind our secretary. And when you speak, please give your name and the organisation you represent. Thank you.
Sure. I'm Miss Hanson. I'm Carol Alton from the Australian newspaper. We have a state election coming up here within the next 12 months, which I think will be the first that One Nation can test on a state level. Have you given any consideration yet to how your preferences might fall and your strategy for that election, given what happened in Western Australia and Queensland?
Well, seeing it work for us in WA and Queensland, I think we'll use the same strategy. What I'd say to the people of South Australia, we must put forward our policies. We will be looking at preferences. We'll sit down and talk to the other political parties as far as preferences, but like I said in my speech, I'm not there to support any of the political parties. I'm there to ensure the best way of getting One Nation people onto the floor of Parliament to represent the people of South Australia.
I just wanted to ask, have you had any discussions about preferences yet, though?
No, no one's approached me at all. I've never spoken to John Howard or anyone from the Liberal Party or the Labor Party or the National Party, for that matter, as far as preferences goes at all. So I've had this issue raised about preferences, and of late too, and especially the next federal election. And now I have the Australian people that say, well, look, you are going to put Labor in. No, I'm not putting Labor in. The government will lose, and they will put Labor in. Governments lose elections. One Nation is not going to make the difference here. And if the voters are concerned about Labor going in because of One Nation, well, then they've got to question the Nationals and the Liberal Party for preferencing Labor above One Nation. So they are putting Labor in.
Wendy Glamatek from ABC News. I'd like to ask you how you feel about the proposals to move illegal immigrants living in Woomera at the moment, women and children, to allow them to live into the community, into the wider community. And also, as someone who says that she's a simple Aussie arguing for a fair go for Australians, how you feel about having the support of people like Dr. Frederick Tobin, who's here today and is well known for denying the Holocaust. He's been very supportive of you today from the floor. Oh. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to speak to him to ask him how he'll vote. But
well, Dr. Tobin, please stand up and please explain, please.
I mean, as someone who...
Well, actually, Dr. Tobin, I've never met you.
I have never met you.
No, I've never met Dr. Tobin before. This was an open forum here today for anyone to attend it, and Dr. Tobin has chosen to attend the function here today, and I've never had the opportunity of meeting Dr. Tobin.
I'm actually relishing in being here and enjoying the wine and everything else. And I can't quite get the argument. But if anyone says that I support Pauline Hanson, it's because in our work at Adelaide Institute, we focus on the national versus international conflict. And Pauline Hanson, in my view, focuses on how to get the family back in order. Like you, Pauline, I've been through divorces, and I've been there, done that.
Thank you, Dr. Tobin. Thank you. Could we go back to questions?
And therefore, would simply like to say that I'm not associated with any political party, but what we look for is freedom of speech. And freedom of speech I define as having the right to think and to speak things in a civilised way.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Tobin.
Again, Ms. Hanson, if I could ask you how you... beg your pardon, sorry to accidentally shut you. If I could again ask you how you feel about having the support of Dr. Tobin.
Well, first time I'm aware of it, so I'm sure I've got the support of a lot of other people in this audience today that support me, Pauline Hanson. I still stand by what I stand by, and and that's the way it is. I've spoken out. Dr. Tobin, probably like a lot of other Australians, are here supporting me today, and I thank you.
And you're on the question of the Woomera refugees or asylum seekers...
I'm not aware of that. I haven't read any of the articles on that about women and children actually being released into the Australian communities. We need to look very carefully at the number of refugees that are actually coming to Australia. It is of great concern to a lot of Australians, especially at $115 a day to keep these people in detention centres. I consider a lot of these people as being queue jumpers. These people are actually passing safe havens to get here to Australia. A lot of these people have actually paid US dollars to get here to Australia. Now, in their countries, they don't have US dollars. Isn't it quite amazing? They can find the US dollars once they're outside their borders. So a lot of this needs questions, it needs investigations, and we need to know who they are. Are they genuine refugees in Australia?
But are you comfortable with the women and children being behind razor wire, or are you comfortable with them being allowed to live into the community while their status is being determined?
I have to know the whole what it's costing the taxpayer to allow them. I'd like to know their rights. Do they have more rights than what the average Aussie out there? Do they have more rights than the pensioners who are struggling, who are now going to lose another 2% off their income? I'd like to know that. Let's not deny our own people the hospital beds, the provisions and reduction to our pensioners when we are looking after the rights of illegals in this country who have come here as queue jumpers.
Thank you. Susie O'Brien from the Advertiser. I'm just wondering whether you still support compulsory national service for people, I think, when they leave Year 12 or reach the age of 18. Secondly, you've mentioned in your policies a review of the Domestic Violence Act. What would that entail, given that it's International Women's Day?
It's surprising enough, I actually spoke about that National Civil Service, and it was in my speech where I actually spoke about that as well. After the conflict in East Timor, where even the Prime Minister came out and said maybe we should reflect on this and have a look at it, I believe that is something that should be asked of Australians if they wish to see that happen, of a National Civil Service, because if you look at our Defence Forces, they've allowed to just about be washed up because there's not enough money being put into it. And I remember my question to the Prime Minister in the House, and I think it was about 1997, why are we giving Indonesia $90 million a year in foreign aid and $8.1 million of that goes into their defence forces when we can't provide it for our own in this country? So
What I'd say is a lot of Australians out there, maybe the National Civil Service would be an answer for a lot of our youth, so they're not pushed on the further education to become academic derelicts on the unemployment queues. That would give them a self of direction in their life, and also they'd may be able to learn a trade and some sort of self-esteem rather than getting on drugs and into crime. Sorry?
And the Domestic Violence Act?
About violence,
a review of the Domestic Violence Act is listed in the policies. I'm just wondering what the angle is there.
You need to always have a look at the violence against women in the home, by all means. But I'd like to see it reviewed and have a look at violence against men. And this is not spoken enough about. There's a lot of men in the household who's up against domestic violence as well. So this isn't reported. So let's treat everyone equally the same, and let's look at domestic violence in the house against men and women.
Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail, Mrs Hanson. The Sunday Mail recently had a survey which, amongst other things, named you as the third pick for PM behind Mr Howard and Senator Stop Despoja. But it also had an overwhelming view that society is less safe than 10 years ago, and vast majority support for bringing back the ability for teachers to use physical punishment on unruly kids. Can I have your views on the reintroduction of the cane for kids and the death penalty for adults, please?
Right. Corporal punishment is a lot of things, views of a lot of people. Should we bring it back into our schools? Because we're getting to a stage in a lot of our classrooms that the teachers are unable to control the children. I don't think we really need to bring back the cane and that sort of punishment if we learn from that. But I remember when I was a child going to school, if I disrupted the class, I was stood outside the door, or I went and did detention and I had to do the time. I think we need to look at that, giving the teachers the responsibility to control their classrooms, and that right has been taken away from them. As far as capital punishment, it is a policy of One Nation to have a referendum on capital punishment, and that's for heinous crimes against our aged and our children and the way their lives are taken away from them. That's a referendum to the Australian people to decide that.
Hi. Cheryl E. Kerr from The Advertiser. I was just wondering how you came to the viewpoint, the initial viewpoint, that the Port Arthur massacre was a conspiracy, and what actually happened to change
Cheryl,
your mind.
Cheryl, you are misled. You apparently haven't read my media release. I have never said anything of such as far as conspiracy theory.
What was your theory then?
Well, it was no theory. You see, he was actually responsible for that, and he was found, he was tried, and he has been sentenced. And as far as I'm concerned, maybe that is one person we should look at for capital punishment, because he's in prison, that's where he belongs, and should never be released until the day he dies. And that's my view about it. Now, the thing
You've never made any statement about it?
No.
Right.
No, I haven't.
Leonie Mellor from Channel 10. I'm just interested in your thoughts on the leadership tussle between Meg Lees and Natasha Stott Despoja, particularly since it seems to have centred a little bit on image.
Well, I've got to question Meg Lees. You know, these protests out the front here. Meg Lees actually released a booklet around the schools discrediting Pauline Hanson and her racist views. Now, if this is what a leader of a political party should do, is actually trying to corrupt the minds of our youth in the school grounds, our children, is atrocious of a leader of any political party. You know, you keep the politics out of our schools. You teach them the Constitution, you teach them about the parliaments and how to vote and the workings of it. You don't allow teachers or politicians to push their own views onto our youth, onto our children in the schools. As far as what is happening with the Democrats reflects on their decision, and I will say their decision because it was the party that passed the GST or allowed it to be passed. I call them not the Democrats, but the GST party. And come the next election, it will be the people of Australia who will decide what will happen to the Democrats. So I don't care who you put up there, whether it's Natasha or whether it's Meg Lees, the Australian people will decide about that.
Pauline, Renee Leith from the Sunday Mail newspaper. Following on from your last question, and being International Women's Day, how do you feel about women in politics, and how do you intend to encourage them to enter the political arena?
Well, I can only speak for myself. It's been a big learning process for me. One Nation does not have a policy on the number of men or the number of women in politics. I think it's patronising women. I think the best person for the job, and if it's a woman, it's a woman. If it's a man, it's a man. And this being brought up all the time, you should have so many women in politics. Well, if that woman is not the best person for this job, she shouldn't be there. And the same is my position. You see, I've never stated that what I've said is, if a person that can come along and do a better job as I, being National President of One Nation, then please, you have my full support. And if that be a man, so be it. And I think that women have come a long way throughout the world, and they've got the vote. But please, we don't need patronising. We need to stand up there on what we have to offer. And what women do have a lot to offer is, in politics, is the, I'd say, the emotional side, and the, rather than the economic side as well. Because women stand by a lot with the family values, the environmental issues, and what it is to run a household. And I think women have a lot to offer in politics. And we say, we can't do any worse than what the men have done. Just have a look at the state of the world. I should say the world. So.
Rod Savage from the Advertiser. Ms Hanson, I was wondering whether you believe that the media coverage you receive is proportionate to the influence you have.
I can't help it if the rest of them are dull and boring.
Could I ask you to elaborate a tiny bit?
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, when I was in Parliament House, it was quite interesting. They'd come up to my office in the hallways of Parliament House and say, Pauline, I agree with you, but I can't say anything. All right? Now, that's their problem. I had Alexander Downer sit beside me in the House and say to me, what are we voting on? I've had two Liberals sit beside me in the House, and one said the other one, he said, what are we voting on? The other one said, I don't know, let's ask Pauline, she always knows. I'm serious. John Anderson, he couldn't answer my question just before the vote. He said, I don't know what we're voting on. Because no one gave me a rule book on how to perform as a politician. It wasn't out there. I just went on what my parents taught me. To be truthful, to be honest, to respect people, and stand up on, you know, I got myself into this position. I don't want to become like all the other politicians. And it's about time this country got people in there who are really there for the right reasons and not being career politicians. And if it gets me the front headlines of the newspapers, why? Well, don't blame me, it's you. You're the ones who put it there. So you ask your own editors and everyone else, why am I there?
I wasn't trying to apportion blame, and thank you for the answer.
Thank you.
Chris Currier from The Australian. Pauline, when you talk of ordinary Australians and Aussies, are you talking inclusively of Greek Australians, Italian Australians, Asian Australians, Afghan Australians? Because when you speak of multiculturalism, you speak of us and them, of Anglo-Australians and them, and they have to conform to our way. Can you answer that, please?
Yep. If you listen to my speech, I said that people have come here from many backgrounds and cultural backgrounds. Don't forget where you've come from, but remember where you are now. And it's about time. I had this fellow come up to me. I was at Tamworth there in January. This fellow came up to me and he said, oh, Pauline, he said, I fully support you. And I said, oh, thank you very much. And I said, where are you from? He said, Lithuania. I said, oh, how long are you out here for? You're on holiday. He said, no, no, no. He said, I live here. I've been here for 30 years. I said, but you're an Aussie. Oh, yes, I'm an Aussie. I said, why didn't you say that in the first place? And I said, I never want to hear you say you're from Lithuania. I said, I want to hear you say you're an Aussie. You come from Sydney. He said, okay. Isn't that what it's all about? Why do we have to say an Aboriginal Australian, an Asian Australian, an English Australian or Greek Australian? Aren't we Australians? Isn't that what it's about?
Samantha Harris from the Advertiser, Pauline. Your environmental platform I'm interested in. What's your take on genetically modified foods and crops in this country? Do you have a stand? Are we a green country or are we a GM country?
No, I have my grave concerns about GMOs, genetically modified organisms, and I think the Australian people need to know what they're eating and what's actually happening in our country. And it's very important if we don't control this or what Monsanto will actually do here in Australia, where they control the seed that is planted in the ground, that you only get one crop off it, and the fertilisers that you have to use. So I believe that we're headed down the track of total control if we don't watch where we're going with this. So environmental issues, as I said, very important to Australia. Very concerned about the salinisation in Australia, whereas I actually went down there, I think Kingston, yes, I had a big look over the area there that's been looked after as far as salinisation. We need to put more money into that and really have a try and clean up Australia as far as salinisation. And yes, the environmental issue is very important to me. I haven't spoken a lot about it in the past. As you can appreciate, ladies and gentlemen, I've come into this arena of politics very naive. I didn't know a lot of issues. I've had to learn as I've gone along. I've listened to the Australian people. I've tried to understand many issues. I won't speak on an issue or a topic unless I know exactly what I'm talking about, and I have researched it. Environmental issues is one that I have been trying to understand and find the right answers for it, but it is one that's dear to the heart of many One Nation people.
About two more questions I think we've got time for.
Hello, Ms. Hanson. Catherine Hockley from the Advertiser. Just want to ask you, you say that your support in South Australia is greater than 10%. What is your support in South Australia as you see it?
No, I believe it will be greater than 10%. And what I can go on, I suppose, is a lot of your the radio program here where you've actually had a polling within a minute or two, and that was the polling that was done. And I believe that time the Labor Party come in at about 10, the Liberals at 8, the Independents at 5, and One Nation at 42. So there seems to be a lot of support for One Nation in the state. I realise I have a lot of support. I feel it when I actually get around South Australia and tour, and we've actually set up about another 5 branches in the last few months. So there is a lot of support for people in Western Australia. But the real poll will come on election day, whether the federal election or the next state election, and that's when the real poll will be. But I'll be out there campaigning for every vote, and I'll say to each and every one of you here today, please give me your vote.
Any more media questions, please?
Yeah, Barry Barrett, freelance rural journalist. I was once an executive member of a political party, and I won't name which one, but I would say now that if I were a dictator in this country, I would say that everybody would be forced to listen to what you have said today.
Barry, please, a question, please, Barry, not a statement, a question, please.
If you had some sort of power, what would you do as far as Queensland is concerned with the incredible clearing of country up there, which is affecting the whole world in global warming?
Right, the clearing of forests, of what's... You're talking about the clearing of...
The clearing of scrub over there, which is going ahead at a horrendous rate compared
over
to other states where they're virtually eliminating clearing of...
Over where? Clearing of where?
In Queensland. Yeah.
Oh, in Queensland.
That's where you came from.
Yeah. Right. Now, that's... Right. Clearing of forests needs to be controlled by all means, but we need to look after it from two issues here. Instead of just going in and clearing forests, you can have selective logging as well that needs to be done in Australia. You've also got to look at jobs that the logging also maintains in Australia, and go in for regrowth and also go in for plantations, the government to promote plantations. A lot of these forests that they actually close up are never touched. They have a lot of fuel that's left on the floor of these forests. They're not maintained by the government, so when a fire goes through it, they're actually destroyed. So what they're out there trying to stop the Australian people from doing and logging, they're not doing it on the other hand by protecting these forests as well. So you need to balance the two together. We need to have a tremendous replant of trees in Australia, Australia-wide. We need to put a lot of money into doing it, and especially to address the salinisation problem that we have in Australia. So I think that you need to have a balance of two. You need to be able to continue with harvesting of the trees in Australia, control the harvesting, but also the governments have to take responsibility of these of the national parks and forests, because there's more damage being done in them by wild pigs and boars and other things that are happening in our forests, and especially when you have these fires that rage through them and destroy a lot of it.
Right, we're getting very close to the end now. Just one question.
My name is Dale Bordock. I'm from Empire Times, the student newspaper at Flinders University. As a university student, I'm a little concerned about your reference to derelict academics, and I was just wondering... I was just wondering what you see as being the role and the value of a tertiary education in Australia, and particularly what stance and policy approaches you intend to take, especially in terms of the Australian universities in the upcoming election.
What's happening is a lot of people are telling the children to go on to further education, and what will happen, just because you have that degree doesn't mean to say that you are going to get a job. And there's a lot of university students that are out there taking the jobs of high school leavers because there's a lack of jobs in this country. And a lot of these people who come out of the universities feel that they have this degree and they can just walk into a company or a business and take over because they know everything, where they've got to work from the ground up into it. And I'm not knocking the academics by no means, but I'm pretty fed up with the academics knocking me because I haven't got the university degree. Now, that's why we need to, by all means, look after those people who wish to further themselves in education. I believe in it very, very much, that we've got to allow those places in Australia for our own students, not overseas students that are taking the places in Australia. Because my parents have worked and I've worked and my children work to pay the taxes in Australia to provide those university places for you. And after your hard work and all the efforts that you've put into it, you should be given the obligation and the opportunities of getting that jobs in Australia, and not seeing others come in from overseas. Because just because you've got that university degree doesn't mean to say that you will get a job like many other Australians who haven't got that degree. So I believe in protecting your positions as well and your jobs, because there's a lot of professionals that are coming out here who you have to fight for that position as well.
Thank you. Just two questions. This is finally the last. There's Peter Gers, and we're going to have one politician, Nick Xenophon.
Miss Hanson, would you please spell Australia?
Peter, don't be naughty. Ask a question. Ask a real question.
That was the question.
You
please
know,
spell Australia. I am an Australian.
Excuse me. You are
an Australian.
Are you an economist? Because I said I would never allow them one of them to do my shopping.
What? Australian.
Peter, do
you... Well, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Final question. This is Nick Xenophon, who is...
Hi. Miss Hanson, Nick Xenophon, not to be confused with xenophobia.
Thank you. Well, how many...
And I can,
how
I can,
ma- But hang on a minute. How many of you, honestly, would have known what the word was, xenophobic? Honestly? Okay, pretty good. So I can see each and every one of you saying, please explain. That's good. Go on, Nick. Okay.
I think I knew what it meant in primary school, actually. I'm an anti... I was elected on a no pokies platform in the state parliament. And you've talked about globalisation, the impact it's had on individuals and struggling fellow Australians, about the devastation that it's caused. What I would like you to explain is, why is it that when one nation had an opportunity to vote against the grain of globalisation with a federal government bill to have a moratorium for online gambling, one nation voted with the interests of the online gambling industry with the big business end of town? That's something that puzzles me.
Nick, can you tell me when that was, what date and when it was?
It was last year around August, and I've got the hand size with me.
Right. At that time last year, Senator Harris is against it, with it, and I'm sure he would have done something about it. We've spoken on many issues, and he's done an excellent job on the floor of Parliament. If you look at his record on the floor of Parliament, that could have been at the time, and I'm not making excuses at this time, but he was has Legionnaires' disease, and it attacked him that time last year, and actually he's got it again at this time. So if we weren't there to speak out against it, it could be in the time that he was actually sick with Legionnaires' disease, and he was away from Parliament. He's away from Parliament again at this time with it.
He actually spoke against the government's bill to have a ban on online gambling.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it, Nick, I'm not aware of what Senator Harris saw all the time. Okay.
Right. Thank you very much indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Ms. Pauline Hanson.
Thank you very much.
I noticed she was drinking white wine at our table, but I hope to convert her to good South Australian Orlando's St Hugo's 1993 Coonawarra Cabernet Sauvignon, one magnum thereof. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sure you've got a lot to talk about, but before you do, we'll draw the raffle, okay? Being International Women's Day, I would like to call up Samala Harris again, because Samala Harris yesterday was presented with an award for International Women's Day at Government House. Congratulations, Sam. Tell us what it was all about.
What International Women's Day is about?
No, what your award was about.
Oh, it was an award for outstanding leadership in journalism. Isn't that sweet? From the females of this city and this state. Oh, I was chuffed to bits. But I think we're going to draw a raffle. I think that's far
Keep
more
talking,
salient.
Because they haven't given me all the tickets. Keep going. Say something.
Well, it is International Women's Day today, and I wish everybody a very happy International Women's Day. And I hope that all the women are going to raise the feminist flag and stand up for themselves, most particularly today. Make their voices heard loud and clear, and keep it that way. And I think Pauline's done rather a good job of that. She has all the courage that a lot of us could do with.
Do you want a job in radio?
I'm drawing.
Okay, where are you going?
You're choosing what the prizes are.
Okay, for six top bottles of wine from the Press Club cellar, we have...
It is Baines.
T. Baines, it's a blue ticket, blue 13, ticket. S13. Come on up, and we've got some wine for you. I'll just grab this just a second. Okay, Walter, come on up. Walter Rogers, make him welcome from Rock Lobster Cafe. Walter's great. He's always got some $50 vouchers for us. This is to the Rock Lobster in Gouges Street for some southern rock lobster and wonderful seafood.
I'm pulling apart a
You're
book.
You're pulling one apart.
One book here, okay. Stuck together.
Not
on.
Fear. They're all stuck together, she says.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, here we go.
Oh. Right, it's a U-ticket 41. Doesn't have a name on it, but it's a greeny-blue U-ticket 41. Over there? Come on down. And again, Walter has the Rigoni's Bistro $50 voucher in Lee Street for some Italian food. If you haven't been there for a while, pop along to Rigoni's. And it is Sophie Downey, D2, Sophie. Where are you, Sophie? Where is she? Down the back? Here she comes. And she's got the Rigoni's Bistro voucher, $50. Thank you. For the carton of Hahn Premium from SA Brewing, we have Trish, I think that's Ryan. Yep.
Trish Ryan.
Trish Ryan, D30. For the carton of SA Premium, it's over here. Come on up and get it afterwards because it's very heavy.
Thanks.
We have the ABC Bookshop book, Calypso Summer by Mike Coward. Thanks to the ABC Bookshop and John Doherty and Gillian Attrell.
Adelaide journalist,
world famous cricket commentator. Good. a blue ticket, E80. E80 for the Mike Coward book. You'd like that one, would you? Okay. Okay, 5 Deanna here today in force, and they've given us their Sports Life Saturday sports pack. Of course, the program's on air every Saturday afternoon now, between 12 and 6 with Rob Popplestone. So, who is it? This one here?
E99.
E99. A blue ticket, E99. For the 5DN Sports Life sports pack. Oh, over there.
I've got to get some bra tables.
And one more. The carton of Hahn Premium Light from SA Brewing. And it is. Dear Mike Pilkington from the Sunday Mail, M69. Mike. Just what Mike needed.
Very nice.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks a lot. And congratulations on your award. Please, and we'll see you next time here at the SA Press Club Lunch. Thank you for your attendance today. Thank you.
Thank you.